Live from the NBC News Radio Broadcasting Studios of KCAA 1050 AM, 102.3 FM and 106.5 FM, we're located in beautiful sunny California and in parallel with the Turfs Up Radio Studio in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Thanks for tuning in, and you can find that at turfsupradio.com. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome from the NBC News Station. How's everybody doing? Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. And hey, it's great to have you back at the mic, Rob.
It's nice. Santa Fe was great.
Yeah.
Wish you were there.
Yes, I wish I was there too at some points of last week, but not all the time.
But I'm taking you somewhere next week.
You are.
We're going to be doing something next week.
Absolutely. That'll be fun.
I'm just checking with our engineer here if he's got somebody. He's still holding for it?
Okay. Yeah, he's still holding.
Anyway, we got a couple things to talk about real quickly
today.
Announcement that we've been talking about for a while. We are going to have
Extreme Water Makeover Contest.
And this is for all the listeners in Orange County, California. And we're starting off in different regions. And we're going to start off with Orange County. Then we'll move to Riverside and Los Angeles and San Bernardino and maybe San Diego and such. But we're starting off with this. We're in partners with the Municipal Water District of Orange County. And what the deal is...
Yeah, so guys, what it is a contest, right? And it's like the old extreme home makeover, but this is about water. So if you can just send us a shot of the front yard, whatever your front yard is, with a short narrative, like 300 words or so, right? I'll give you, we'll give you the email of where to send that to in a bit. And you just tell us why in those 300 words that you need an extreme water makeover. So the goal is to make water more, use your water more efficiently and reduce your monthly water bill.
Yeah, because water is getting expensive. Then everything in Orange County and others go to this tiered rate system. And so they determine how much space you have in your yard.
Square footage of irrigated area.
Right. How many people live in the house? Do they have pets and so forth? And then they figure out what your water budget is for the month. And if you use more than that, it bumps it up to double. Yeah. If you have more than that, then it goes to triple.
All right. So, hey, let's get to the good part. I bet these guys are wondering what the prizes are. Well, what do you win?
You get a lot of stuff. You get a complete new irrigation system put in, so it gets all updated. You get some EPA WaterSense and Energy Star in-home appliances. And you get some EPA-certified low-flow shower heads and toilets.
Yeah, so not just outside the house with irrigation system, but inside as well.
Yeah,
right? So a real water tune-up, if you will.
Yeah, because even though you have everything on the inside, 50% of your watering goes to the outside.
Right. And so Toro is the main sponsor for that. But there's some other folks involved there, too, as well. So
absolutely. Obviously, it's Toro and the Water Zone show because we're part of Toro.
Right.
Kellogg's Garden Products. Appliances are going to come from Howard's Appliances, which is a big local company. They have 12 stores, I think, in the Southland, which is great. And Pearl's Premium Grass Seed. And so between all of us, and Home Depot.
Oh, yeah, Home Depot. Don't forget the Home Depot.
So we have a good crowd of people and companies that are going to be in with this. So we're very excited. So again, you send this a picture of your front lawn and your landscape with 300 words why you need an extreme water makeover. Send it to waterzone@toro.com. That's waterzone@toro, TORO.com. The contest is open all the way through the last day of July, and then we will pick the winner in August, probably mid-August, because we have to validate the entries and go through all of that. So we have a little process we have to do, and the legal department says we got to do that. So we're very excited about it, and we'll start off in Orange County. Right now they're proposing to send it to 3.2 million residents.
Yeah, so it's a flyer that'll come, right?
In their water bill from their water agency.
Right. A little flyer in the water bill. And all the information that we just described to you is also on that flyer, all the contest rules and regulations. So have fun, guys. Get ready and sharpen your pencil.
And that's a good thing, so we appreciate that. Hey, I got a little thing I'm going to do here, which Chris doesn't know about. It's nothing sneaky.
Oh, you surprise me all the time, so I'm not going to be.
The other day, I have to tell a story, and I promised this person he did a favor. He went above and beyond, and I want to give recognition to people who go above and beyond. My wife's tire went flat on the freeway. She got it pumped up by a tow truck. She got home. It leaked again. I brought it over to the place. They plugged it. They brought it home. She brought it home. The next day, it went flat again. I brought it back to the thing, and you know, it was. They said there was another hole, and whatever. It got into a whole thing. But I got to tell you, there's a guy. He's a service manager, and I think he's on the line. Dan, are you there?
Yeah, how's it going, man?
Hey, I appreciate it. I told you I would have you on the show for a minute to tell everybody that's listening, our 40,000 listeners plus, what a great job you did and how impressed I was and how professional you guys were to take care of that. And just so everybody knows, they gave me a new tire for free. I appreciate that. My wife appreciates that. And Dan works. Dan, why don't you tell them about where you work and what you guys got going?
Well, we're here at Anaheim Hills Pet Boys. We do everything from brakes to taking engines apart. You know, anybody that wants to come in, we'll take care of them. You know, my guys are here professional.
Yep.
And then, you know, We'll take care of anybody that wants to come in.
Good. And I was very impressed. Like I said, you guys went way above that you had to, and I certainly appreciate that. And that's why I told you, you know, I would certainly call you and have you on the air. And you're live right now.
Yeah. So that's an awesome story, Rob. You didn't tell me about that. That is a surprise. No. And Dan, great job, man. Congratulations to you.
That.
You guys have any specials going on this week?
This week, yeah, we also run that special buy three going free on the Coopers and Kumos. So anybody needs tires, come right in.
Great. Well, Dan, anything else you want to say to us? And why don't you give your address?
Yeah, the address here will be 8205 East Anaheim Canyon Road in the city of Anaheim.
Yeah, it's between Weir Canyon and Imperial Highway. And, again, when you go there, see my new friend Dan. He's a super guy. And he didn't have to do this, give me the tire and for free and do it. But his guys did a great job, and they're very honest, and that's what I appreciate. And he deserves to get an attaboy. So I'll applaud you right here.
Way to go, Dan.
You got two people
good
applauding.
Good job, buddy.
So,
appreciate
anyway,
that, man.
Thanks a lot, Dan. And
the engineer's giving him a thumb up, too.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And you can hear yourself if you go to kcaaradio.com tomorrow and go to the schedule Thursday and click on that and scroll down where it says Water Zone, and you can hear yourself on the radio. You'll hear the podcast.
It'll replay on podcast tomorrow, Dan.
All right, man. Appreciate that.
Okay.
All right. Great rest of the day to you, Dan.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
All right. So we got two things out of the way. The next thing I want to do is bring in our most famous person.
That's right, our favorite Maven.
Person, right. And the purveyor of Maven's Notebook, Ms. Chris Austin. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good. Sorry I held us up for a minute, but I had to give the guy credit and due because he went
No problem. I was writing down that email address, waterzone@toral.com, right?
Perfect.
Because when you get out to L.A. County, oh, gosh, I bet I'm not eligible, but, boy, wouldn't I like an extreme water makeover.
Well, it'll be coming, Chris, so, you know.
Well, before we hit the news, since I'm honored and humbled to sit and listen to both smart people in the water industry, such as you, Chris and Chris, Chris Squared, I had a couple quickie questions for both of you, see if you can answer that.
All right.
So what do you call
another surprise.
Yeah, what do you call a dangerous amount of precipitation?
Extreme precipitation.
No? Other Chris?
He's hiding the answers from me.
I know. It's a one-liner. I'm waiting.
It's called the Reign of Terror. All right, here's the second question.
Oh, my gosh, he's got another one.
I got a couple more. What do you call a wet teddy bear?
I don't know.
Chris?
You got me.
Drizzly bear.
Oh, yeah.
And,
drizzly bear.
And the last one here is, how do you make holy water?
I don't know. You tell me.
You boil the hell out of it.
Yeah.
and last one, just something to make you go, if smart water was actually smart, then why did it get bottled? Something to think about.
I don't know.
Something to think.
Drink that smart water stuff.
No.
Quack, quack, quack.
Anyway, so as I said earlier, we're on this new Turfs Up Radio, which is carrying us live, and if they're watching us, and the head man over there, Mr. Gruner, how you doing, Darren? Everything's going great here, and so we're going to bring us the news here and what's happening, and I guess let me find my paper.
I don't know. I can start it off if you're looking for something here. So
no,
I said, because, you know, as you know, I am a
what are
dedicated reader of Maven's Notebook, and so Chris, the thing that every week something strikes me as very interesting, and this week it did as well. There was no mistake. So this time it was the whole the NOAA fisheries report, right? So all the stuff that the salmon spawn is becoming is starting to come back with a little cooler waters offshore. And things like that. And being an avid fisherman at the same time, I see that being represented in the catch reports every day from the different fishing guys, you know, and the charters that go out. So I see that happening. So I just wanted to give you a note of appreciation for putting that in your news feed this week.
And you're a fisherman.
Oh, yeah.
Too.
And, you know, I will confess I didn't dig into all the details. What I see here with the NOAA plan and what I see here with what, you know, in general, what all the fisheries management agencies are starting to move towards, it's like, you know, we're trying to get off this focus on one single species and what that single species might need and trying to go to a broader ecosystem approach where we're not trying to figure out what one species needs because it's been listed or whatever, but what does the whole ecosystem need in order to be a better ecosystem that's a better habitat not just for one species,
right,
but for all species?
Right.
You know, and when you focus on one species, you know, there are just kind of trade-offs in nature and things that just kind of control other things. And if you try to optimize for one particular species and what they need, then you're missing out on what a lot of others need. So it's really, I think, reflective of a broad sort of trying to steer the ship, be it an ocean liner, but trying to steer people to stop thinking about just one single fish, like the Delta smelt or the spring run Chinook salmon on the, you know, Sacramento River, and say, how can we achieve better overall ecosystem health? You know, what are the broader ecosystem processes?
Sharks.
Yeah, and predators, right.
Yeah, and it brings other things, you know, other things around, too. You know?
Yeah.
So,
yes.
And, you know, also, interestingly enough, that warm blob of ocean water, they called it, I think, the Pacific blob. I mean, that was also a factor in our weather that we had during that period of time, because ocean temperatures in the atmosphere are highly interactive. You know, these are just all things,
sure,
that, you know, we're just beginning to understand.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, there's so much to think about when you think about water and what it carries and what it does and the need. And I guess speaking of heat, I heard Newsom, Governor Newsom, was catching some heat for using climate funds on drinking water.
Oh, yeah, yes, yeah.
Yeah, you know, because he's really opened it up to some legal challenges. I mean, everybody wants, you know, I think it's hard to find someone out there on the street that will tell you that they are against the state doing something about contaminated drinking water in these very poor, disadvantaged communities in the Central Valley. But, you know, when, you know, we have specific rules for spending specific funds, and when you mix those rules up, you open yourselves up to a challenge.
Yep.
And, you know, the cap and trade funds were meant to be used for, you know, things that were fighting climate resilience, and contaminated drinking water in the Central Valley doesn't really fall under that category. So,
no,
you
but
know,
I did,
some
but,
people
but
saying
I,
that's, you know, this is not the way to do it.
No, I understand that, but, you know, The California government's been doing that for a lot of years, but at the end of the day, to me, I think the giving people who live here, and the children and the older, everybody needs to have clean water, period.
And you know, again, as I said before, we know how to deliver clean drinking water to people's houses.
Right.
It's not, there's no mystery in that. It's, the issue just boils down to funding.
Yep.
So, you know, and how to fund it. And the water agencies really kicked up a big fuss and fight over having a water tax put on everybody's bills. And I mean, they had their reasons for it. You know, it is a lot of accounting. And, you know, way back when Maven wasn't Maven, then, you know, my personal development 1.0, I worked as a full charge bookkeeper, and I know what it's like to have to fill out those forms for the government when you collect the tax. You know, there's a reporting thing and deadlines, and also, I mean, it's a whole thing. And they also, you know, said, well, if you bring up, you know, if you start putting this tax on for this, then it will just open the door for other taxes to be put on it for other things. And people are very opposed to taxes, I guess. And, you know, which is understandable. You know, the thing in my mind that I see is that, you know, we live in a state where we have run infrastructure so we can take a drop of water that originates at our northern border in the Klamath Basin, and we can literally transport it all the way down to San Diego. And there are impacts for moving that water, impacts to habitat, to species, to communities along the way. And we have never taxed the people who receive that water. Instead, you know, ecosystem restoration or trying to fix these impacts for transporting this water all around the state and mostly to Southern California or to Central Valley agriculture, to major, you know, users of water.
Yeah.
We've shipped this around, but we never charge them. Instead, we make the whole state pay by making this part of our general fund or general obligation bonds that the whole state pays.
Right.
So there are those that argue that having a public goods charge on water that is extracted and diverted to other parts of the state, and that charge would go for, you know, paying for the restoration of these places where we take the water from, I mean, that's not necessarily, I mean, to me, you know, I hate to give opinions on anything, but that does not sound unreasonable to me. But it's not been in place. And there's a lot of resistance to putting such a thing in place, you know. So,
well, you know, there's, you know, my personal thing is that there's lots of things that are happening in this state that I think shouldn't go forward, and there's millions and billions of dollars that I won't go into what that is. We all know what that is, the train. And anyway, but the train to nowhere.
You know,
the train to nowhere. But I'll repeat that twice. But sorry about that. But
well,
you know,
so I got to tell you a few different through Fresno recently. I mean, what they have built for this train is immense.
Yes.
I am just like, okay. I mean, I'll admit I was never a fan of that bullet train. But I also look at this whole mess in Fresno and I'm like, what the hell are you going to do with this?
And it's still not a high-speed track. And it just goes to the women's prison. So I guess any guy who wants to go see his girlfriend in the prison can go up and do that. But I just see Chris is laughing here. I seriously think that if they, like I've always said, take the top five things that the state needs to take care of and take care of those and then move the next one up in line to do it. Because, you know, I don't care who these people are, where they're from, legal, illegal, whatever. They're human beings, and if we can't give and plus the EPA and all the laws say they have to have clean water, so somebody needs to take care of it. And I know it's expensive, absolutely expensive, but
phenomenally expensive.
Yeah,
Yeah.
They need to sit down like everything else in this country and put the politics aside and get down to helping the people that are here, period. And that's on both sides. So I'm neutral in that.
So, Chris, what strikes you this week in Maven's notebook as rising to the top of the list?
Well, I guess the focus on trying to implement the groundwater management continues. Although I guess what I should talk about is not really what's happening, but what we're all waiting for. And if you're a donor or a sponsor, then you get this newsletter that I send out every Monday morning. And ever since Newsom sort of pulled the plug a little bit on the Delta tunnels, just a little bit. There's not going to be two. Apparently, it's only going to be one. But I mean, work continues. You may think it's dead, but it's not dead. They still have the Delta Conveyance Design Construction Authority is still having meetings, and they're working on designing now a one tunnel system that fits with Newsom's plans. So the Delta tunnels, they aren't dead, but there's not a lot going on right now to watch for them. But I was reminded that we actually have something big coming up, which is the biological opinions that are about to be issued for the State Water Project and the federal, Central Valley Water Project. Now, they did this reconsultation process on the biological opinions on the operations of these water projects to comply with endangered species regulations, and these had not been revised in like 10 years. So, it was a big deal. And then the Trump administration put out a memo, and they put some very strict time limits on this, meaning, strict not in long, but in short. And they gave their federal agencies just like 2 months to complete the first step to redo these biological opinions, which they delivered just in the nick of time on January 31st. And then they have 135 days from January 31st to issue the biological opinion. And the Trump administration has been very aggressive.
Seems like everything's we're waiting on, but that's life here in California. And I guess it's that way all over the country.
Yeah, I don't know that we're exclusive in that.
No, I don't think so either.
Yeah, in that realm.
Well, anyway, Chris, we appreciate you coming on. We were going to ask you, and we figured we'd do it
yes,
on air.
Don't forget.
Next week, Chris here and I are going to be at a cocktail party with Weiland at his studio in Laguna Beach, and we were going to do a live show with that, and Inge's going to join because it's an ag week. But would you like to be on that with, and you can get to talk and talk with Weiland and ask him anything you want?
I have to think about what that would be. But.
Oh. That's why we're giving you a little notice on the air and putting you on the spot. But no,
yeah.
You're more than welcome
we
to do that. And you would do your weather, your
news, California
news
water news.
Yeah. Anyway, so anyway, we gotta take a little break and go to our commercials, and our next guest is waiting. But Chris, thank you again. Don't forget, everybody listening, please go to mavensnotebook.com. You can donate, you can be a subscriber, you can sign up for free email service and enjoy the convenience of receiving all of the notebook's issues and everything that's happening on a daily basis. So check it out. It's the best news in California for water.
Have a great week, Chris.
You too. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. We'll be back in just a second. Actually, 2 minutes.
KCAA Loma Linda, 1050 AM, K292 FQ Riverside, and K293 CF Moreno Valley.
If you knew there was a pipe cement that works better than the one you're currently using, is better for you and the environment, and costs the same or less, would you buy it? Well, no-brainer, right? Weldon, the trusted leader in solvent cements for over 60 years, is pleased to introduce a new line of solvent cements that does all that. Introducing the Eco Series line of solvent cements for PVC piping systems. Not only does it work great and set fast, it also has 30% lower solvent emissions and less smelly fumes. A better workplace environment when you're installing pipes. But don't just take our word for it. EcoSeries products are the only solvent cements that are Green Seal certified for environmental innovation for effective performance, improved working conditions, and for use with potable water. Now available in a medium-bodied fast-setting blue formula, 905 Eco, and a regular-bodied fast-setting clear formula, 900 Eco. Pick up a can today from your local distributor and see, smell, and feel the difference, just like Joe Sweat, president of Sunrise Irrigation, did. He said, after using Weldon's 905 Eco, we immediately noticed the application was smooth and there was noticeably less odor than other blue solvent cements on the market. The guys love it. To learn more about Eco solvent cements from Weldon, visit the website at www.weldon.com or call the technical service hotline at 877-477-8327. That's 877-477-8327.
They love you. They love you not. They love you. Satisfying your customers, it's a full-time job. Want an easy way to make them happy? Try having your ornamentals delivered straight to the job site with Nursery Direct. Could save you and your clients a pretty penny. Think about it. Instead of driving to the nearest nursery, picking up the order, and then driving to the job site, the crew's able to begin work right away. That cuts time and labor. Savings you can pass on to your customers. And you can get your plants delivered direct, even if you don't have a nursery branch in your area. Here's another quick tip. Keep a substitutions list on standby for every project, so your team knows what to do in case a plant isn't in stock. Because there's nothing customers appreciate more than a project that finishes on time and on budget. They love you. They really love you. Aww.
Well, welcome back to the second half of the Water Zone with Chris and Rob, and we're having a great day. Lots of stuff we talked about. Don't forget the people living in Orange County, California. We have this Extreme Water Makeover Contest. All you do is send a photo of your front yard along with a short, Chris is showing it, but they can't read it. It's too far away from the camera.
Far away. Too far away.
And I can't read the script because you took it from me. You took it from me. Just tell us why you need Extreme Water Makeover. The goal is to use water more efficiently and to help reduce your monthly water bill. Get a complete front yard irrigation system update. Get EPA and WaterSense in-home appliances and some low-flow shower heads and low-flow toilets for free. So all you do is do that and send 300 words why you need it. Waterzone@toro.com. All right, that's great. Well, now we're going to talk about something that really bugs me. Anyway, why we said that is we have a gentleman named Steve Hazard, who's principal of a company called Organic Control, and we want to welcome Steve to the show. He's also, I have to say, he is a Green Industry Hall of Fame inductee.
As are you, Rob Stone.
Well, I didn't care about me. I wanted to make it to him. Oh. He deserves. He's been in it longer than I have. So, Steve, welcome to the show. That your mom grew a victory garden, and a lot of people weren't around, or they don't remember. We were too young to what a victory garden was. Can you kind of explain that and how you got interested in all of this?
Yeah, I was born right after World War II, and so some of my earliest memories are my mother taking me by the hand and walking me through her garden and telling me that this used to be a victory garden because people were encouraged during the war to grow their own food, which she did. And so would always remind me growing up that that was her victory garden, where she grew a lot of food and cake during those years. Anybody who was around during World War II.
Yeah, I wasn't even a twinkle in my mom's eye at that time, or my dad's.
So I got a question for you. Then this is Chris Steve, I'd like to give you a welcome to the show. So a little bit about you, if you will. I mean, you know, what spurred in the younger days, or way back when, or maybe you can give us a timeline and a history of that. You've already told us sort of when, but what kind of got you interested in this? You know, did you collect bugs? Did you study them? You know, what kind of spurred this whole thing for you personally?
How'd you get bitten into this?
Yeah, right. Now they get the bite. You know, I absolutely was not interested in bugs
as a kid. I was more interested in building things and stuff. But my original partners and I heard about a guy who was growing beneficial insects for the agricultural market. And this was a few years after the book Silent Spring had come out, and so people were just starting to become aware of what we were doing to our environment by putting so much chemicals into it. And so we thought that if we provided beneficial insects for the home gardener, that wow, people would be just really excited and need a path to our door. So it didn't exactly work out quite like that, but we did continue to grow. And so now we supply beneficial insects to gardeners all over the country.
Well, you've said, I've heard people say, hey, you know, the only good bug is a dead bug. So when you hear that saying, what does that strike in your mind?
When we started the company, that was kind of a popular phrase at the time. A gardener's goal was to rid their yard of any bugs at all. But we soon realized that if you do that, then you have no defense for the pests. You know, you've got all this great food for the pests. So what we learned was that really what we want is a balance of good bugs and bad bugs, and then you'll have an army in your yard to attack when pests do come in or their numbers rise. So the ideal thing is to have sort of a balance of good bugs and bugs going on all the time, and then you won't have any big outbreaks.
Do you find that most homeowners don't know the difference of bugs? They just say, hey, we got bugs, and go get spray, and they spray it?
Well, that used to certainly be true, but in the last few years, people have really become much more environmentally aware. They're really, especially with kids, pets in the yard, people have become really hesitant to use any kind of chemicals. So they really are looking for alternatives. So typically when they go to the nursery, say, well, I've got aphids, but what can I do? But I don't want to use the chemicals because I've got kids out in the yard. Then they'll learn about beneficial insects and control aphids and other pests.
Yeah, I think some of the young, well, I shouldn't say this, but I would kind of think more of the younger people are starting to get into the healthy thing, like for their dogs, you know, don't give them food with yeast in it and grass fed and what's all the no GMAs and all GMOs, I mean, and all of those things. I think people are starting to look at what they eat, what's around them, and you know, we understand why. You know, I learned a lot why organic food costs so much or more. Okay, there is a difference because they don't get the same level of quantities of crops because they don't use the chemicals which help get more out, but they also contaminate some of the things, and it's not that healthy for you. So, I do respect, and I got to admit, there is a different taste to fruits and vegetables that are organically grown versus regular. I see that at home with my wife when she goes out and buys that stuff.
I also agree with you, Steve, when you say that people in general have become more environmentally. They've got a greater capacity for understanding of what happens in their own backyards, right? And you know, kids and dogs and all that stuff, and they want to be more careful. So that must have helped along the way for you guys.
Yeah, that awareness has really helped a lot. And plus, people find out that it's really fun to release the beneficial insects in their yard. Just you know, having kind of an active living garden is just great. When there's a lot of bugs around, you know, you get more birds coming around. And you know, one of the most popular beneficial insects, of course, is ladybugs. Kids love to watch ladybugs crawl around and fly. And so just the whole process of being aware of what's going on in your garden kind of, I don't know, one of our phrases is we want to work with Mother Nature instead of against her. So by kind of releasing beneficial insects in your yard, you're kind of helping work with Mother Nature do things the way she's been doing it for thousands and millions of years. So we're just giving her a little helping hand.
I had a question, but I'll ask you that later. But do you find that bugs get create more of a resistance towards chemical over time? You know.
Yeah, absolutely. When you go and spray chemicals in your yard to control a pest, you're probably going to kill like 95% of the insects that you're trying to kill. But a few of them will survive. And the reason they survive is because they're somehow a little different than all the rest. Somehow they were genetically a little different than the rest. And so those survive, and those are the ones that breed. So then the next time you go to use that chemical, you're probably going to have to use more of it or a stronger version of it. And again, you're going to kill 95%, but the ones that survive, again, are going to be stronger than all the rest. So what you do when you're using chemicals to control pests is you're constantly breeding stronger and stronger pests until eventually you won't be able to control them at all.
Right.
One of the nice things about using beneficial insects is that the pests cannot build up a resistance to being eaten.
Right.
It's like that old 1950s movies where they did radiation into the ground and the spiders got big. Do you remember that, Chris?
Oh, yeah.
See, did you ever see that?
Love that kind of old stuff, old style horror movies.
That's the movie.
Yeah.
The movies now where the ants get real big and they make that noise. I had nightmares about that for months after I saw that.
Yeah. So, Steve, even with a greater awareness out there, you know, of homeowners in their backyard, do you still see an overutilization of chemicals in the home gardening market?
Not nearly as much as we used to, just because of that increased awareness. It's still, people, you know, when they see bugs, they want to reach something that can give them gratification. Using beneficial insects takes a little longer and a little more patience, but people just have become so environmentally aware, concerned about what they're putting into their environment, into the ground, and into their body, that you don't see that nearly as much.
Right. So given not just the resistance of bugs to the use of chemicals over time, are there other bad effects of using chemicals other than the resistance?
Well, just the fact that they're going into the soil and staying in the soil, as they kill the pests, they also kill good bugs. And again, which you want to have as many good bugs in your yard as possible to keep that balance.
Yeah, beneficial insects. Yeah,
I would assume you can probably get runoff if they do excess irrigation, and that washes down the drains to the ocean and everywhere else.
Yeah, that's more of a concern agriculturally than for a home gardener, but it does apply even to the home gardener.
So as a company who sells these, do you, what's the right word here, do you reproduce them? I mean, do you have a...
we grow them.
Okay. I didn't know the right word to use at that point, but...
Yeah, you could say that we rear them, but we grow them.
Okay.
Now, there's some insects we can't grow, and one of the most popular ones is ladybug. We can't grow. We have tried over the years, but there's some kind of an enzyme or something in a live aphid that triggers egg laying.
Hmm.
Never been able to duplicate, so we have to depend on collecting those in the wild. But most of our products, beneficial insects, can grow in what are called sectors, places that grow bugs.
So what are these, like big gigantic tanks and things that you put them in, or?
Different things. Some insects insects that like to eat there's an insect called a cryptolamus that likes to eat a special kind of bug, and it also likes to eat the potato mold. So there are rooms full of moldy potatoes that grow particular insects. So each insect has its own technique for growing. Tricky science because they could get these rooms get invaded with pests and wipe out a whole supply. So it's tricky business.
So Steve, for our listeners, is there sort of a short list, you know, a pros and cons, a good bugs and a bad bugs list that you can kind of tell our listeners about in terms of what's good and what's bad? Common names.
Sure. probably the most common garden pest that people encounter are aphids.
Aphids.
Grow roses in your yard, you've probably seen aphids on the stems of the plants. They do is they suck the sap out of the plant. And so a great solution to that is that favorite bug of about everybody, the ladybug. A ladybug can eat up to 50 aphids per day. And they can do this both in their larval stage and their adult stage. They have pinchers, just kind of like that movie Them we were talking about earlier, where the ants had big mandibles and they come up and grab people. And ladybugs actually do the same thing. They're a pretty fierce insect if you are another insect. And they will come up, pierce the body of an aphid, suck all the fluid out, and then go on to the next one. That's how they can eat so many. So they are a great bug to use for aphid control. And an even better one is something called a green lace worm. That's also pretty common in Southern California. You see them flying around in the evening, and they look like small green butterflies with lacy wings, hence the name green lace wings. And in their larval stage, they can eat up to 1,000 aphids a day, 20 times as much as the ladybug.
Hmm.
So that's why they get the name aphid line.
Now, do you when you grow these beneficial ones, do you give them the bad ones to eat to make them grow? Or they have to have some other kind of foods? Or
yeah, we have found foods that we can grow that they will eat as well as the aphids, so that we can grow them and harvest the eggs. And what we do is we have to sell the eggs to people to release in their yard.
Oh. So, talking about bugs and stuff, you know, there's lots of worms in the ground. Are worms beneficial to the garden?
Yeah, worms are terrific for the garden because one of the amazing things about worms is that they never sleep. They burrow 24 hours a day. So if you're going to sleep tonight, you can think about all the worms around the world that are just burrowing away.
Hmm.
And while they're doing that, they create tunnels behind them, which help aerate the soil. So they allow oxygen from the air to get down into the soil and get to the roots of the plant. So that is their great benefit. Plus, as they eat, they take long organic molecules and kind of break them down into shorter organic molecules, which are more digestible by plants. So the roots of plants make better use of nutrients that are in the yard. So they have that benefit as well. And then another benefit is that the enzymes that they use to break down their food and digest it kind of stays in their poop, if you will, which is often referred to as casting. And it's when a plant sucks up the casting, their roots, and gets into the sap, when an insect, like, say, a whitefly, tries to suck the sap out of that plant and it finds this enzyme in there, it will leave immediately because it knows it's dissolved its extracellular. So a great way to whitefly, for instance, is eat a plant, say a hibiscus, being attacked by whitefly. A parasite is something that will lay its egg inside of a host, and then its egg hatches and feeds on the host. So a good example of that is something called a trichogramma wasp. We actually don't use that wasp word because it sounds so threatening, but these little trichogramma wasps are tiny little insects about the size of a period at the end of a sentence. And even though they're really small, they can really do great work. They actually are the most widely grown beneficial insect around the world because they can attack 20 different kinds of caterpillar type of insects.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the ones we're all most familiar with is tomato hornworm.
Right.
Big, ugly tomato hornworm. And these trichogramma wasps will parasitize eggs, where they will lay their egg inside of the hornworm egg. Trichogramma's egg hatches first and feeds on the tomato hornworm egg, which kills it and prevents it from ever hatching. So a great way to control caterpillars is with this insect called a trichogramma, which is an example of a parasite.
Yeah, the first time I saw one of those horn things, it was on my wife's tomato plants, and she grabbed me to come outside. It's a gigantic caterpillar with a horn on top, and I never saw that. I think it was about 2 years ago. It was the first time I ever seen one in person. It was kind of weird looking.
they're just really kind of gross looking, and they're big, you know, about the size of your little finger.
Yeah.
And so it's always amazing to me that this little tiny flying insect can control these big old hornworms, but they do a great job, plus a lot of other different kinds of insects that have a caterpillar larval. Mm.
And then I assume then the pollinators are things like bees and things like that that come and pollinate
three P's of bugs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, pollinators can be almost any insect that moves from flower to flower and transfers pollen. And, of course, the one we're most familiar with are honeybees. There's actually two kinds of bees in the world. There's the social bees and solitary bees. And most of the bees in the world are solitary bees, but we are most familiar with social bees because they do such a great job of making honey, which we really like.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a great job of pollinating it. They transport it. So people raise honeybees and transport them around the fields to help with pollination.
Right.
But there's the solitary bees are the ones that were actually here in North America first. And they actually, on an individual basis, do a better job. One mate bee, for example, which is an example of a solitary bee, can do the pollinating work of 120 honeybees. And the reason for that is because honeybees, when they go flower to flower gathering pollen and nectar, they have little sacks on their hind legs, and they stuff the pollen and nectar in those sacks and carry it back to the hive. But the solitary bees don't have a hive. They don't have a queen. They operate individually. And so as they go from flower to flower and the pollen sticks to the hairs on their body, they don't really carry it back to any nest. They just let it stay there. So they just do a really efficient job of spreading all this pollen around. So that's why one of the insects that we sell is this mason bee, because it does just such a great job of pollen.
All right. Well, Steve, you weren't here at the beginning of the show, but Rob gave us a bunch of riddles, so I'm gonna take an opportunity to get back at him here, man. How do bees brush their hair?
Come on.
They use a honeycomb.
Oh. Okay, you got me. So you're even.
Oh, I feel vindicated.
You're even. Hey, Steve, just a couple quick last questions here. People can attract these good insects by certain plants, I think like rosemary, lavender, and goldenrod and stuff, and they can also buy them, obviously, from you. What types do you sell, and how do they sell? I know we did a thing with Western Municipal Water District, and they released 25,000 ladybugs, not bugs. And I said to them, how do you know you got 25,000 of them? So what, are you selling by the pound, or are you selling by the – I can't see you counting one by one and loading them up.
Just to make sure I understood your question, we do not sell plants.
No. I said, but there's plants that attract good bugs. But I know people can buy these beneficial bugs from you. And how do you package them, and how do you know how many's in a bag or a box or carton or whatever you sell them in?
Yeah. Well, like ladybugs, which is our most well-known product, we actually do that by volume. when we're packaging bugs, they're in a bucket. There will be like 100,000 ladybugs in a bucket, and we take a scoop and put them into the container. And we know very closely how many bugs are in each scoop because the volume that they take up is always the same. So
it's like going to 31 flavors. Say, I want one scoop or two.
Yes.
How do people? Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, how can people reach your company and get more information?
Our website is organiccontrol.com, and they can learn all kinds of our bugs we sell and tests as well, so learn about them.